Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Christopher Price, and I'm filling in for John Rook today on Patriots Playbook, joined by Eric Scalavino. If you want to get in touch with us, give us a call at 508-543-7482. You can also reach us via email at webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. We will get to the emails and phone calls momentarily. But right off the top, Eric, first of all, I'd like to welcome you in.
How you doing?
Not bad.
Good to see you again, brother.
Not bad at all. This is great. This is Colts week. I think everyone around here is very, very excited. They talked a little bit about it in the locker room today. It's kind of rivalry week, kind of an old school college vibe here. And we want to welcome in the former head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, Tony Dungy. Coach Dungy, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's good to be with you. Maybe I got some inside information when I was on hold there listening to some of those play calls from Coach Belichick.
First off, tell us your initial impressions of this game. It's never a dull one when these two teams get together, and this year should be no exception.
Oh, I think it'll be the same as it's been. And actually, the regular season games have been closer, more interesting than the postseason games. There's so much riding on it, and it seems like they go down to the last play or the last drive. And I think this will be similar. Both teams maybe not running the ball as well as they would like, but the passing game's in high gear. Both teams with a little transition on defense, but they seem to be coming around too. And I think you've got, especially New England, playing their best football these last 3 weeks.
One of the things that I think stands out for a lot of folks here in New England is that you are kind of the one guy who was part of this rivalry who is no longer here. In your place is Coach Jim Caldwell. Tell us a little bit about him. A lot of folks in New England don't know a whole lot about him, don't know a whole lot about his background. Tell us what kind of coach he is, and just kind of give us a little bit of background on the guy.
Well, Jim is a tremendous coach. He's a little bit like I am, probably trying to stay under the radar, and you're not going to see his total personality, but he's a very, very smart guy, number one. Very articulate, great communicator, did a great job with our quarterbacks and the offensive people. But he'd been a head coach at Wake Forest, head coach in college before. He coached in college for a long time. I actually played against him at University of Iowa. He was a defensive back when I was a quarterback at Minnesota. But the guy who probably sold me on him more than anything was Kerry Collins. He coached Kerry at Penn State when they won the national championship. He was the quarterback coach there. And worked under Joe Paterno, worked for Bill McCartney, and several just tremendous college coaches. And he's a good man. He's a good person and very, very smart and a great leader.
Tony, one of the consistent aspects of this rivalry through this decade has been the powerful offenses on both sides. And this week, New England's offense might be taking a little bit more of a spotlight role because of what's happening on the defense for the Colts. The secondary seems to be falling apart pretty quickly here, and a lot of young guys are going to have to come in and step up in a very big game. How do you see that playing out this Sunday?
Well, I think they'll be fine, and what you have to remember is that the Colts system is very much like the Patriots system. It's not based on individual players going out and playing a lot of man-to-man coverage and shutting people down. It's based on doing your job and being part of a good unit. I remember in 2004 when the Patriots secondary had a bunch of injuries, and we were having a great year offensively, and I think Troy Brown went in and played nickelback, and they shut us down.
Right.
So it's I wouldn't worry. I know the Colts aren't too concerned about their young guys playing, and I don't think the fans need to be either, that all of a sudden their defense is going to fall apart, because it's not based on individual talent only.
Teddy Bruschi was saying earlier this week that if there was one game he could come back for, if there was one week where he felt like, you know what, I kind of miss this. I want to come back. I want to be a part of this Colts-Patriots rivalry again. This would be the week. Do you feel a little bit of that this week?
Oh, sure you do. I'm having to hold Rodney Harrison down in the chair in the studio. You know, he wants to get back and be involved. And same way from a coaching standpoint, I have not missed it all that much. You missed the relationship with your guys and that type of thing. But these are the games you live for as a player or a coach, where you know you've got the whole country watching. There's a lot riding on it. Probably home field advantage in the AFC is going to rest on this game. And these are the games that you enjoyed coaching.
Coach, this Patriots defense looks a little bit different this year than it has in years past. There's a number of new faces. Teddy Bruschi, Mike Vrabel, Richard Seymour, Rodney, all those guys are gone, replaced by newer, younger players. What stands out for you the most about this new-look Patriots defense?
Well, they're fast, and they're meshing together real well. You don't have the big-name players, as you mentioned. You probably don't have the guys that could create their own pressure with one-on-one rushes. When you played in the past, Richard Seymour, Vrabel, Roosevelt, Colvin, all those guys could come through and they could just beat people straight up one-on-one. Now it's a little bit more of a team effort creating that pressure. But I like the way they're playing and the fact that they play so well together as a young unit, very similar to what Indianapolis is trying to do.
And we talked earlier about the Colts' injuries on defense, but on offense for New England, their offensive line is a little bit banged up right now. You have left tackle Matt Leidt, who's been out for a few weeks. You had center Dan Copen, who went out against the Dolphins in the second quarter this past week. And it looks like, at this point anyway, their backups are both going to have to play again this week. Do you see that as an advantage for the Colts' defensive line?
Well, they're going to look at it that way. The Colts are. Obviously, their whole defense starts with Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney up front. That's where everything is generated, the pressure off the outside and forcing that quarterback to step up in the pocket. So I know those guys are anxious to go and feel like they're going to have to take advantage of the crowd noise and the surface and perhaps new offensive linemen in there and do the job, because if you don't pressure Tom, you're going to have a long day.
Coach, there is a school of thought here in New England that Tom struggled coming off the knee injury last year, struggled through the first few 5, 6, 7 games of this season. And his struggles were compared in a kind of a roundabout fashion to what Peyton went through last year, although Peyton's surgery was, from what we understand, far less invasive. Is there something to that? Do you buy into that school of thought that it takes a quarterback, no matter how talented that quarterback might be, a little time to kind of get back into the flow, get back into the rhythm, maybe 6 or 7 games to get back to where they need to be?
Well, I think great quarterbacks like those two guys, they are products of routine, and they like to do things the same way. And I know for Peyton, he missed that time. You know, he's used to 200 throws a day at a certain time in the off season, and 100 throws a day at other times. He's used to X amount of plays in training camp, and he didn't get that. And so while he may have felt healthy and maybe physically was fine by week 1, week 2, just routine-wise, he wasn't there. And so he was at about a 78-80 rating in the first 5 weeks. And in the last 8 weeks, he was at 110 or 115. So I kind of thought that might happen with Tom as well. And it looks like the last 3 or 4 weeks, you're starting to see that sharpness that everyone expects from him.
Tony, when you look at this game, a lot of people's instinct is to talk about the quarterbacks and the wide receivers and the passing game, but I'm kind of getting a gut feeling that maybe the running game is going to have to play an important part in this game on either side. Do you sense that at all?
Well, if one side gets their running game going, it will be a big advantage, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think what is going to determine the game is which defensive unit is able to pressure the other quarterback. If one team can do it and the other team can't, that side is going to win, because if you don't pressure these two quarterbacks, they're going to carve up any secondary.
Coach, one of the things that we wanted to talk about today between ourselves here in the studio, as well as with callers and emailers, is their favorite memories of these great games, these truly great games that the Colts and the Patriots have had dating back to the start of the the Tom Brady, Peyton Manning era. Do you have a favorite moment? Do you have something that stands out for you? Maybe not necessarily a game, but a single play or an event that really stands out for you as your favorite moment in this rivalry?
Well, I guess for me, it's the two plays in the RCA Dome. 2003, we're playing those guys, and they had gotten way ahead of us. We got back fourth and one. We had to score a touchdown to win. It was fourth and one at the one, and they stopped us. Willie McGinnis made a great play, and that really got them a home field advantage that 2003 year. And then 2006, we come back in the same situation, basically, same end of the field and at the end of the game, and we had to score a touchdown to win, and we ran, and Joseph Addai got it in there. And for me, obviously, that was it. You know, we got the ball in, and we were going to the Super Bowl. It was a huge, huge moment for our franchise.
Tony, yesterday on the show, we had your colleague Rodney Harrison on, and we were talking a little bit about the game and about the transition from the field to the studio, and kind of want to get your thoughts on it, too. I know you said earlier you're enjoying the new role. What have you found to be the most difficult part of this transition?
Well, Rodney and I are both rookies, and you know, after me coaching 28 years and Rodney playing, you know, 15-plus, to go back and start at the beginning again is different. And you do feel like your rookie year, that you're learning the ropes as you go. And the toughest thing for me has been trying to make those statements in 10 to 15 seconds because you feel like there's a lot that you want to explain, but you don't have time. I know Minnesota was playing Baltimore, and I said at the end of the game I felt like they should have thrown the ball and tried to make a first down. And, you know, you don't really get a chance to explain it. You'd like to be able to say, well, here's the reasons why, because of the situation, the time left in the game, the fact that Minnesota had some injuries on defense. But you just have to make your statement. And sometimes that's how analysts can come across as being like a know-it-all. And so you have to kind of balance that, but you know, that's where you are on TV. You've got to make your points quick and try to get the audience to understand. So we're learning. I think we're both learning that. And Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann and Chris Collinsworth, all the guys at NBC have helped us out.
Well, then you're gonna have to come on talk radio more, because we got hours that we have to kill.
Well,
and there's plenty of time.
You know, for me, I guess my personality would be better on radio, because I love to get into things in depth. And, you know, my producer, Sam Flood's always saying, get in and get out. Make your point and get out. So I'm learning.
Coach, along those same lines, what's been the biggest surprise for you in the transition to the broadcast booth from the sidelines?
I think how much I've enjoyed it, and the fact that at NBC they've got so much gadgetry to make the production better. And, you know, we'll talk about highlighting a play, and what do you want to do with this? Do we want to clicker it? Do we want to sport vision it? Do we want to highlight this? We can show this from this angle. And I guess just learning all the ways that we could make the broadcast a little better and more informative. It's been a lot of fun.
Coach, one of the matchups that I think we're really looking forward to watching this week is a young guy who has only spent a few games around here so far, has got a relatively short Patriots career thus far, is Brandon McGowan. He's really kind of taken on that role that Rodney had the last few years, and when it comes to D'ing up those tight ends, he did a pretty good job against Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah, Rodney really feels like he's going to be the key, and he feels like they're going to put him on Dallas Clark. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. I haven't seen Brandon all that much, but Rodney is really high on him. I think it's going to be a great matchup.
Give us the name of one or two guys, and we'll get you out of here on this. Give us the name of one or two guys that we might not know of now, but you think, not know of, but, you know, might be kind of sleeping on at this point, but might have an impact in this game.
Well, I think it's, you know, it may be Lacy, the corner from Indy, who's going to be matched up, I'm sure, a lot on Randy Moss. But it may be another guy on the offense, and I'm not sure who it's going to be. Rodney thinks Kevin Faulk, and that's a good name too. Kevin has hurt the Colts in the past. There's going to be a lot of focus on Moss, a lot of focus on Welker, and Moss may they may do a lot of things to take him away. But Kevin Faulk may be the guy that, you know, is hard to handle.
Coach, we really appreciate your time. Thanks a lot for coming out and joining us.
Yes, looking forward to Sunday night.
Take care. Us too.
All righty. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
See you.
Tony Dungy, NBC Sports, joining us. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love being able to pick the brain, first of all, of a guy who's coached and had the level of success that he's had in the NFL, but someone who can maybe bring a different perspective to the whole thing as opposed to folks around here in New England who are thinking Patriots, Patriots, Patriots all the time, and rightly so, but at the same time, it's good to get a perspective from the other side.
So do you think, to Tony's point at the top, he's going to start calling the Colts and going, hey, you guys got to look for that grapes check. We'll look for that grapes check, as Bill was saying. Right. I heard it in a show today,
exactly.
The grapes check. I don't know what it is, but watch for the grapes.
Well, he was having dinner, and he was looking over the wine list. That's the grapes check. I mean, there's really no surprises there. But, no, yeah, you're – oh, thank you. Finally. What was I just going to say? I just completely lost my train of thought.
The idea of getting an outside perspective, the idea of not only
especially in this game, we have, it's, you know, you have Harrison and Dungy, who are both 1 year removed from this rivalry and are both, you know, in studio analyzing it. I mean, it's not just picking the brain of an expert, but an expert who was so close to the situation for so long. You know, it's a real treat.
It is. It's literally, and I appreciate him being able to say, when we asked him about his favorite memories or the memories that really stand out for him in this rivalry, being able to say, hey, that 2003 game where Willie McGinnis made that stop on Adrian James right on the goal line, that was pretty special. That was pretty unique.
I was a little surprised to hear him say that, honestly, because as a coach, you would think that's one of the more frustrating moments that you would remember, but. You know, maybe over the years, and, you know, he does have his ring now, so
That's true.
He was ever robbed of it.
I thought he was going to sit here and say, okay, you know, that moment in the 2006 AFC Championship game.
Well, yeah, when they picked off Brady.
That for me, and I know a lot of
Marlon Jackson.
Marlon Jackson made the pick. That was a great, great football game. It was two classic football teams, really. I think just going in there, and you hate to use the heavyweight fight cliche, but it's literally two guys just, Peyton and Tom Brady, just swinging away at each other.
Right.
And it was fantastic to watch. It was a great football game. But these two teams have played so many great games over the years. We want to get into some of them. We want to know what your favorite Patriots-Colts memory is, what your favorite game, what things stand out for you about the rivalry between the Patriots and the Colts. You're listening to Patriots Playbook right here on Patriots.com. My name is Christopher Price. You can give us a call at 508-543-7482. You can also send us an email at webradio@patriots.com. We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football shape, Sergeant Trace.
Will Ferrell with the cowbell.
Do you remember that character's name?
No.
Gene Frankel.
Wow.
Gene Frankel.
Would never have guessed that.
I could have used a little more cowbell.
Thank you.
I gotta have more cowbell.
I got a fever.
I could have used
and the only prescription.
I gotta have more cowbell.
There's more cowbell.
Do you remember?
I did a sketch about a birthday party, and I decided on air that my character should have a French accent and rub himself. I wanted to know how much of the show is scripted and how much of it is crazy make-em-ups and ad-libs, improvs.
The genius that is Christopher Walken. I love that. And his character in that? Bruce Dickinson. And then he says, yes, the Bruce Dickinson.
Bruce Dickinson.
I love that sketch.
I put my pants on one leg at a time, and once they're on, I make gold records.
You are listening to Patriots Playbook. My name is Christopher Price. I'm filling in for John Rook, joined in studio by Eric Scalavino. You can give us a call at 508-543-7482. That number is 508-543-7482. You can also shoot us an email to webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. Now, Eric, I'm rolling up my sleeves here. I'm getting ready for this. This is going to be a good talk. I think this is going to be... I really
thought you were getting ready
to
punch me.
I'm coming over the table.
Down.
I'm coming over the table at you.
That happens between noon and two.
I want to know some of your favorite memories. I want to get into this. Not just you, but me and hopefully some callers, some emailers can send us their favorite memories. We talked a little bit about it with Tony Dungy in the previous segment. Mm-hmm. Some of your favorite memories of this great rivalry between the Colts and the Patriots. And let's go back to 2001 because that was really exactly. Thank you. Perfect. The time machine. 2001 was the start of really the Brady Manning era, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
Yeah. And you can go all the way back to 2001. Give me some of your two, maybe three of your favorite memories from this rivalry.
I think one of my favorites is one of the most recent ones. It was the 07 season where we were at the RCA Dome, and it was during that run of, you know, undefeated 16-0 season, and both teams were undefeated at the time, I believe.
Yep.
Or did the Colts have one loss at the time?
I'm pretty sure they were both undefeated. I think they were both undefeated.
Yeah. I think
The
Colts might have had one loss.
They might have had one loss because I remember the Patriots and the Cowboys were both undefeated.
That definitely was the case. But anyway, we were at the RCA Dome, and all that week, my roommate at the time on the road was Brian Lowe, who you know. Mm-hmm. And we were talking all week and saying, if they beat the Colts, they're not going to lose another game this year. And we were really hinging the whole season on that one game. It was tight. It was back and forth. And then Kevin Falk had that great touchdown at the end where he caught it about the 10-yard line, snuck between two guys, and dove for the end zone.
Literally lunged over the
goal line and got the score late. And that's how New England ended up winning the game. And I remember coming back from that game, and Brian and I were talking and saying, they're not going to lose. They're not going to lose another game. This was their toughest game. This was the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, turns out, you know, the Giants kind of screwed us that season. But that, to me, was one of the most exciting because at the time, everybody knew it. Everyone in the country was talking about it, saying if they can get by Indianapolis, they're not going to lose. And that was a great game.
That game, for me, the one thing, and that was a great game, and Falk's catch and run at the end of the game for the game-winning touchdown, or what I believe was the game-winning touchdown, was a big moment for me. And that stood out. For me, the singular play that stood out for me in that game was Randy Moss going over the middle and making that one-handed grab in traffic that just really, for me, set him apart. And there were other great connections he made with Brady that year, mm-hmm. including in the regular season finale against the Giants. That touchdown pass, everyone remembers that. But for me, that one play really epitomized the greatness of Randy Moss within that Patriots offense.
Mm-hmm.
That was incredibly impressive. One of the things for me, and I wrote this today on WEI.com, you know, some of the big memories, the things
Get
that
the
stand out
sound.
For me.
There we go.
Thank you. Thank you. One of the things that really stood out for me was that game in that play. And, of course, as we all know, the Patriots ended up winning that game,
mm-hmm.
going undefeated in the regular season, and we all know what happened in the postseason.
Right.
We don't need to revisit that. Let's go to the phones right now. Dwayne from Boston is on the line. Dwayne, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. How are you guys doing?
Not bad. Dwayne? How you doing, Dwayne?
I'm doing good. I just want to chime in on what some of my favorite games have been. My favorite moment out of all of the Patriots games, period, is one that I don't hear too many people talk about. And that's the one in 2004 playoffs,
mm-hmm.
when Teddy Bruschi took the ball from Dominick Rhodes.
Yeah, that's a great
I have never
play.
Seen a grown man just snatch something from another grown man who clearly wanted it. He
yeah.
had it in his possession, and he just ran up to him and just took the ball. To me, that signaled to me that the Patriots just wanted that game more. It was symbolic of what that game was.
Dwayne, I remember that play in it. If I remember correctly, it happened pretty early in that game. That really kind of set the tone for the afternoon.
Right. And after that moment, you could kind of see the look on the team's face where it's almost like a Tyson fight, where they just you could just see the air of confidence just mm-hmm. leave their bodies after that play.
Yeah, the Manning face showed up at that point. The Manning face came out and was in full effect. After that play.
That was really, I think if you were an Indianapolis Colts fan at that point, 2003, 2004, you started to wonder and you
yeah.
started to worry and you started to say, are we ever going to get over this hump? I mean, are we ever going to beat this team? Because it seemed that every single time these two teams played, at least during the regular season, and, you know, for, you know,
well,
the better part of the postseason
too.
As well, the playoffs yeah. as well, the Patriots would almost always get the better of them.
Right. And the Patriots fans, of course, like myself, couldn't be any happier. I also agree with you about the 2007 play that Randy Moss caught that ball over the field.
You can go to, and I encourage people to do this. Go to YouTube and look it up and try and find it, because you really forget what an unbelievable play, what an unbelievable catch. Not only the catch, the physical catch, but the fact that he made it in traffic. Usually, you can make those catches, you know, in the back of the end zone,
on the sideline,
yeah. But to do that in traffic is really something special.
Yeah. What amazed me the most about it is the fact that he extended his entire body up and his entire hand. He extended his entire body. He wasn't completely in the middle of the air when he caught that ball one-handed. And I had a picture of it that I had taken out of the Boston Globe, and I had it on my cubicle at work for, like, I just took it down at the beginning of the year, actually. I mean, I was that amazed by that catch.
It was
a
great catch.
I had a really good picture of it so I could keep it.
It was a great catch.
Yeah.
My last memory is a negative one, but it stuck in my head. In the 2006 playoff game, and they lost to the Colts.
Yep. The AFC Championship.
I was at the championship game. I was at the bar for the first half of the game, and basically, once our group stopped buying beers, they kind of just shoved us out of the place.
You should have kept drinking. Dwayne, if you had kept drinking, the Patriots would have won that game.
Well, that's one way to look at it, but it wasn't quite working that way. And when we were on the train, we were all talking and laughing. We were saying, "I wonder what the score is now." And I turned to my radio and I heard the score was 21-3. And we started talking to people on the train saying, "Oh man, Manning always loses these games. It's going to be 4 championships in 6 years or something like that." I mean, we were just going on and on talking about how it's a Patriots dynasty. Then, of course, we come home and see the Patriots lose.
Yeah.
I think that might have been the most broken heart I've been in a long time.
Dwayne, you want to talk about people kind of getting ahead of themselves, and I can share this with Eric. I don't know if you were there for the game. But there were guys, there were members of the media in the press box at halftime making plane reservations
for the
Super Bowl that year, thinking, well, you know, 21-6 at halftime.
Yeah.
There's no way this Patriots team is going to let up. There's no way this Patriots team is going to lose this game. Let's go ahead and book our flights to Miami for the Super Bowl. And again, we all know how that ended.
I know. Those two back-to-back years were ridiculous heartbreakers.
They were.
Losing to the Colts in the AFC Championship and then losing to the Giants a year later. Ugh. Two of the worst experiences in a football experience I've ever had.
But again, that game, though, from start to finish, that 2006 AFC Championship game, that was a great, great football game. It didn't end the way a lot of Patriots fans wanted it to, but that was a great, great football game.
I will tell you that I'm actually glad that I didn't stay at the bar, because when I got home and we ended up breaking up, and I was at home by myself, and I'm watching the game by myself, and I was standing on my couch. I mean, I was jumping around. I was trying to figure out, like, what in the world is going on. And then when Rashe Caldwell dropped that pass, I lost my mind.
Yep.
I absolutely lost my mind. I almost broke my TV. Uh-huh. I mean, I completely lost it. And I was a nervous wreck at the end of that game.
Dwayne, thank you very much.
You and everybody else.
No problem. Yeah. All right, guys.
All right, Dwayne. Take care.
We appreciate it, Dwayne. One of the things, and we just hit one of the games here that kind of stood out for us, that 2006 or the 2007 game. The other game, the other handful of games that stand out for me, the 2003 stop, the Willie McGinnis stop at the end of the game, obviously, and then the 2004 game here, the season opener, where McGinnis made a great play,
right.
Pushed him, I don't want to say pushed him out of field goal range.
Put him in at the far end of field goal range.
Exactly.
So it was a longer kick for Vanderjerk, and he came up wide, I believe.
He came into that kick. He went into that kick. I looked this up yesterday. 42 in a row. Mm-hmm. He had made 42 kicks in a row, 42 successful field goal attempts,
right.
And then he pushes that one wide right.
Right. Yeah, and he was a talker.
Oh, yeah.
He was a trash talker.
Now, you as a kicker.
I think they're ripe for the picking.
There you go. Now, you as a kicker, what did you think of Vanderjagt?
Well, I mean, it's always nice for a kicker to get exposure like that, but, you know, Vinatieri did it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
People wanted to talk to him, but he wasn't a controversial character. A Vanderjerk is why I call him that, because that's how he kind of acted when he was in the media. He talked and talked and talked and talked a lot of smack, and I think it all came back to bite him in that game. Especially, you know, he had that streak going that you mentioned, and a game winner against a rival. I mean, it's only week one; it didn't really affect their whole season, but still, not just a rivalry game, but bragging rights game.
That's exactly a bragging rights
game. You know, it's not like a playoff game with implications or anything, but still, he came up short when it counted the most. And at that point, that was the story of that rivalry, was the Patriots coming up big and the Colts falling short.
The thing for me, and I don't know if a lot of people noticed that, but Michael Smith from ESPN.com, he wrote for ESPN.com when that game was taking place, I guess he picked up on the fact that Vanderjagt, when he came out for the kick, kind of rubbed his thumb and forefinger and middle finger together. Kind of, you know, I'm money, man. I'm money. I'm money in the bank. I'm the man.
Oh, really?
I'm money, basically, saying.
To who? Who did he do that?
To the Patriots sideline.
Oh, really?
Saying, you know what? This thing is money in the bank. It's done. It's taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes out and misses the kick.
Yeah.
He goes out and misses the kick.
You know, on the one hand, you need a guy who's confident like that, but at the same time, you put yourself at risk by doing that in public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to do that in your locker room or
on the sidelines, just as amongst your team, that's one thing.
Yeah, doing that, putting yourself out there. I mean, of course, if he makes the kick, then that just increases the legend. But it's a calculated risk, and you know, he fell short on that.
The other game that stands out for me, and we could talk a little bit more about this, share your favorite Patriots-Colts memories with us here on Patriots Playbook. Give us a call at 508-543-7482. That's 508-543-7482. You can also email us, webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. The game that I don't think gets enough credit around here in terms of a tone setter, maybe. Excuse me, I'm going to sneeze.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm good. I'm good. You ever think you have to sneeze?
Yeah.
And you don't have to sneeze?
Yeah. And I hate when you don't sneeze afterwards because...
You still have it.
And you still have it, and you think, well, you got to get it over with.
Yeah.
Just want to.
So I may sneeze feeling. Just unexpectedly momentarily. So just as a word of warning.
Just turn the red button off.
Exactly. The game in 2001, September 2001, here.
Brady's first.
Exactly. Brady's game first in that rivalry. Game here. Mm-hmm. Brady's first start, his first game as a part of the rivalry as well. September 2001. Against the Indianapolis Colts at Old Foxborough Stadium. Brady talked a little bit about it yesterday. Kind of used some colorful language, but that's a story for another day. Talking about his first
meeting.
Sounds
like Dennis O'Callaghan interviews, huh?
Or PFW in progress.
That game for me stood out because he was the defense really kind of carried the day in that one. Brian Cox laid a hit on Jerome Paython that I think Jerome Paython is still woozy over. And I think that set the tone. The Patriots came away with, I believe, four turnovers that afternoon.
Yeah.
And dominated that game. They won the game 44-13.
Yeah, that's like an offensive explosion, but it was actually a defensive, more of a defensive game.
Exactly. The Colts came into that game. I think their first two games, they had an average. They averaged 40-something points a game. The Patriots are starting a relatively unknown guy in Tom Brady. Oh, my God, how's this all going to shake out? And the Patriots ended up putting a licking on him, winning the game 44-13, and kind of taking off from that point. But again, that was Tom Brady's first start in the NFL.
I'm just looking over the stats for that year and the coaching staff for the Pats. It's amazing how consistent they've been with coaches on under Belichick. Names that are familiar sounding to you: Ivan Fears, who at the time was wide receivers coach. Pepper Johnson, who at the time was inside linebackers coach. Dante Scarnecchia, same title, assistant head coach, offensive line. And Mike Wojcik, strength and conditioning coach.
All guys were still here.
But names, also names that you would never remember. Ned Burke, coaching assistant.
Sounds like
Marcus
a
Paul,
name.
Assistant strength and conditioning coach.
I remember him being here. I remember he ended up, I think, if I remember correctly, ended up going to the Jets.
I'm not sure, but then there are names, you know, you should remember. Romeo Cornell, Charlie Weiss, Eric Mangini, defensive backs coach.
What do you know?
Interesting, looking back on
that. I'm excited to be a head coach.
Yeah, you should be.
Who wants?
Shouldn't have gotten one in the first place.
Was one of the Ryans was on that staff.
Rob
Ryan
was on that staff as well.
One of the linebackers.
Outside linebackers.
Right? Yeah, that was a pretty good staff. That's a good point, though. That's an excellent point that coaching staff largely has remained intact since 2001. Mm-hmm. That kind of continuity is rare in the National Football League.
Here's a blast from the past for you. Ready?
Fourth down. 15 seconds to go. The handoff to Edger.
And he stopped! He is stopped! Willie McGinnis made the stop at the 1 yard line!
Would you believe it?
And listen to how loudly you can hear the cheers from the Patriots sideline because there's no sound coming from the rest of the RCA Dome.
That's one of the things, too, and if you've never seen a game in Indianapolis, whether it's Lucas Oil Stadium or the RCA Dome, I don't think you're prepared as a fan, as a member of the media, when you walk in there and the Colts have the ball on offense as to how quiet it really is.
Mm-hmm.
You can, and I'm not lying here, you can hear Peyton Manning's calls echo throughout the building, which is very, very rare.
More so in the old stadium because our press box seats were outside in the stands. Now we're kind of in the new Lucas Oil Stadium. It's sort of enclosed, and I don't think it's as loud a stadium. I don't think it's as much of an advantage as RCA was.
Well, they both Manning talked a little bit about that yesterday on the conference call. Brady has said that as well. He has never played there. He acknowledged he never played there, but he talked to Peyton, and apparently Peyton says it's a little bit quieter there than it is at
It is, and I think it's because of the architecture of it, not anything to do with the fans. I think they're still as loud as they always were, but the acoustics make it that way. It's big and boxy, whereas the RCA Dome was more rounded and there were no opportunities for the sound to travel anywhere. It was contained inside the building. You have the roof that's able to open. You have the end zone where there's all those windows that are able to open. So, and it's much bigger. The inside is much bigger. It's cavernous almost. And the sound just doesn't collect like it did in the RCA Dome.
The RCA Dome was loud.
It was really loud. It was one of the loudest places you'll ever see a football game.
And you can argue whether or not some of that loudness was artificially piped in. I know that they've been accused over the years.
Mm-hmm.
They were accused over the years of having some of that piped in, kind of artificially hyping that crowd noise. But at the same time, you walked into that building. That was a two-year plug game.
Yeah.
There was no messing around. That was a loud, loud building. I have not seen a game at Lucas Oil Stadium yet. This is going to be my first game. I went out to the Combine, but I have not seen a game at Lucas Oil Stadium. I'm very interested to see if there is still that level of home field advantage with the noise, with just that absolute it really is. It was absolutely amazing. It kind of had to
It's a great stadium.
It is.
It's one of my top five stadiums in the league, probably one of the top three, I think. But I just don't think it's as loud as the old one was.
We have you here till 3 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
Give me your take on this game. We talked a little bit about it with Tony Dungy right off the top, but give me your take on this game. What stands out for you the most? Obviously, again, whenever these two teams get together, it's always a great one, and this week should be no exception.
Well, the thing that stands out to me is the first question I asked Tony was about the health of the Colts secondary, which has taken a huge hit in recent weeks. But on the other side, New England's wide receiver core isn't exactly... You know, aside from Moss and Welker, there's a lot of question marks around there. Edelman's been out. Tate has been out. As far as backups go, Aiken is really your number three guy at this point. Matthew Slater has made the conversion, at least in practice jersey-wise, from the defensive blue to the offensive white.
Hasn't taken a whole lot of offensive snaps.
No, but he's worked out and warmed up with the wide receivers the last week or two. So... You know, on paper, there's an advantage because they're, for the third time this year, going to be facing rookie cornerbacks. And you'd have to think, obviously, with Moss and Welker out there, that's an advantage for the Patriots offense. I just hope that depth doesn't become an issue for them at that position. But that's what I'm really looking for. That and the other thing I asked Tony about, the offensive line for the Patriots. Matt Light, Dan Copen, probably not going to play. You've got rookie... Sebastian Vollmer at left.
Who's played very well.
Who has
lately,
played well.
But this is going to be big test for him.
Right. So that, to me, stands out most about this rivalry. Whereas years past, it was all about the veterans. This year, I think the onus is going to be on a lot of the rookies and young players in this rivalry who are being forced to step up in such a big game. And I think the way those rookies respond is going to determine who wins the game. I think the Patriots have the edge there. But we'll see what happens on Sunday.
What do you think about the school of thought that says if you want to beat the Colts, you keep the ball out of Peyton Manning's hands, you control the clock, you run the ball, you do whatever it takes to keep their defense on the field as long as possible?
Well, that's kind of what I was trying to get into with Tony when I asked him if he thought the running games would become a factor. I think everyone expects that because the Colts secondary is banged up, because New England has Moss and Welker, that the Patriots are going to throw the ball. I'm not expecting them not to throw the ball, but I think the running game, even with Taylor and Morris, who've been hurt and probably won't be playing this week, still being out, I think New England may try to do that, may try to control the clock, keep the ball out of Manning's hands, and throw to get the advantage. Throw to get the first downs, but then run the ball to try to keep the clock moving.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get, like we saw the Dolphins do last week, start off the second half with a 10-minute drive, score a touchdown. Okay, if you can get pressure on Manning, turn the ball back over. You know, I'm sure that's what the game plan is going to call for, but whether they can execute it or not is another thing.
One of the things that in our interview with Coach Dungy he talked about is that Kevin Faulk could be a guy to look for this week. And I think that there's something to that. We haven't seen, even though the numbers are still there, you get a feeling you haven't seen a whole lot of Kevin Faulk this year, or as much as the Patriots have usually used him.
Just in general, you mean?
Yeah, just in general. But I think that this is the kind of situation, this is the kind of scenario where you can see a game where Kevin Faulk gets 20 to 25 touches, just because he can be so versatile, not only in the run game, working those screens, working those draw plays. This might be his kind of game.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, again, there are so many rookies that I think are taking center stage in this game, but it might have to come down to a veteran making a crucial play. And, you know, I said in the 07 game he had the winning touchdown. You know, screen game could be a big part of it too. If the Colts try to blitz Brady to get pressure on him and force him into bad throws. The screens should be there. And if that's the case, then Falk could have a big day. But if Vollmer and Connolly, who are stepping in for Light and Copeman respectively, can hold up that front seven, keep the pressure off him, well, then Brady's going to have a field day.
We've talked a little bit about the Patriots offense versus the Indianapolis defense, but let's flip it around a little bit and see what stands out for the both of us when it comes to the Indianapolis offense. They have a number of new faces over there.
Yeah.
They are not the same group that they were the last few years that Patriots fans have gotten used to over the years. How do you see their offense shaping up coming into this game? Obviously, you're going to see a lot of Dallas Clark. Mm-hmm. We're going to see a lot of Reggie Wayne. We're going to see a lot of Joseph Addai. But what else, if anything else, sticks out for you?
Well, there's a guy that they have. They have two young receivers, Garcon and Colley. And when we were doing our draft prep, Paul Perillo and I both thought that Austin Colley was a player that fit the Patriots mold and would have been a great addition to the Patriots. When the Colts got him, Paul and I both looked at each other and said, that's going to be like Anthony Gonzalez the year before. We're going to regret that the Colts got him, and we didn't. And I think he's proving that. He's had some big games for them. And I think the fact that they've lost Marvin Harrison and have had to make the switch for Reggie Wayne being the unquestioned number one receiver there, with Dallas Clark being probably 1B, they need some other weapons, and I think they're getting them in these younger guys. And I'm still, with Peyton Manning at quarterback and all those other guys we talked about, I'm still concerned about their ability to score against New England. I think they have the power to do it.
The New England defense looks a lot different, and we talked a little bit about this before, but the New England defense, obviously, and Patriots fans have grown used to this now over the course of a half a season, but this defense looks a lot different than the defense that has faced the Colts in years past. There are a lot of new names. They're younger. They're probably, I would go out on a limb and say this, but they're probably a lot faster than they were over the last few years.
Which they're going to need.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that I think that plays into the Patriots' hands a little bit more. One of the things, and again, we keep going back to this, but we talked a little bit about this before, the idea that Brandon McGowan is going to be the guy who's going to be matched up an awful lot on Dallas Clark.
At that 07 game that I mentioned in my memories earlier, that was another memory I took from that game. Rodney Harrison playing one-on-one against Dallas Clark completely shut him down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting to see if McGowan, who's expected to do that because of what he's done against tight ends so far this year, if he can do the same thing. You do that, that's going to go a long way in getting the front seven to be able to pressure Manning, because if you take away his safety valve, then he's going to be forced to look at Wayne a lot and these younger receivers, and that's going to be an element of the offense that the Colts have leaned heavily on. And if you can take that away the way they did a couple of years ago, that's a huge advantage. And here's the sneeze.
It almost came again.
It
almost happened. I hate this. We're gonna wait to go to a commercial for me to sneeze.
All right.
I'll force it.
But you're right. I'm going to look for McGowan to try to step up against Clark. And, at this point in his career, he's a lot quicker, I think, than Harrison was. So on paper, it looks like there might be an advantage. But, we'll see.
I want to get your take on one more thing, and then I want to get a prediction for you from you for this game before we let you get out of here.
All right.
It's very, very tough to sack Peyton Manning. And that's been the subject of a couple of interviews over the last couple of days in the New England locker room. He's one of the toughest guys in the league to sack. He's been sacked just 7 times through 8 games, which is tied for the 4th lowest total in the National Football League. And his ratio of 1 sack for every 46 pass plays is the best in the league. Both of the guys that we talked to today said that it's team defense that gets you sacks on Peyton Manning. But even if you play perfect team defense, sometimes he'll just throw the ball away. He knows when to throw the ball away. He knows when to get rid of it. What does the Patriots pass rush have to do on Sunday to get the necessary amount of pressure on Peyton Manning?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, that, I think, is going to decide the ball game, how they do that. You'd like to think that your playmakers are going to make those plays. You would expect guys like Adalys Thomas, Tully Bantakane, Mike Wright. Those are the guys who have the ability and have proven that they can get in the backfield and do that. What it might take is a lot of stunting, getting them out of position, not lining them up where you think they're going to be, because the Colts have a pretty good offensive line too, and they're not going to be fooled by much. But not giving Manning something familiar to look at, might, because that's how it was in the beginning with him, when you'd see a lot of 4, 5, 6 guys standing up at the line of scrimmage, and he wasn't sure who was going to be rushing, who was going to be dropping
back.
Who
was coming when.
Yeah, maybe try to revert to some of that old confusion-type tactic, have a lot more people standing up as opposed to hand on the ground. That might be something that could do it. You know, if I had that answer, I'd be on the coaching staff, because not many people in the NFL know how to do that.
That's true.
So it'll be interesting to see what Bill can do and Dean Pease and all of his defensive coaches. But boy, it's going to be a great game. I really think it's going to live up to the hype. The Colts are undefeated, probably shouldn't be, but they are, and I think that is actually a little bit of an advantage for New England.
Did Indianapolis have played a softer schedule?
Well, no. If they had lost last week to Indy, and they get that loss out of the way, when you're an undefeated team and you get to this point in the season, the talk and the expectation around everything is, can they do the whole thing? And then a lot of teams, they might not admit it, but they might like getting that loss out of the way so they don't have to answer those questions
anymore.
It's
easier to be a 14-2 team than it is to be a – yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
I think that – It's also to the advantage of New England that the Colts are now due for a loss. Having escaped last week, they have all these injuries piling up. I know they're still at home, but how much more can the team endure? New England isn't exactly at 100% health either, but I think their key guys are there. So with a couple of exceptions on the offensive line, but I really think it's going to be a good game, another classic in a long line of classic games.
Give me a prediction.
I think.
Or is it too early in the
week? No.
You can beg out and you could say it's too early in the week.
No, that's fine. I think New England's going to win. I think it's going to be probably not a shootout score like high 30s or 40s, but and not that low a score either, Bill. But I think it's somewhere, I'm going to say mid 20s for New England, 25, 28.
8.
To about 18-20 for the Colts.
See, I had about 20-24, 20-21. Mm-hmm. Kind of a mid-20s. I think that feels about right. These are two good defenses, two decent defenses who are still kind of finding their way in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. and you have two very good offenses. I think a mid-20s sounds about right to mm-hmm. me, but I agree with you. I think this is going to be a great game. I think the Patriots are going to be just a little bit better. Not much, but just a little bit better than the Colts.
Yeah, so do I.
There we go.
Going to be a great game, though.
All right. Well, Eric, thank you very much for hanging around, as always.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it very much.
And you're going to be there this weekend, so we'll see you.
I am going to be there this weekend, exactly.
When are you going in, Saturday night?
I am going I'm flying out Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I love visiting Indianapolis mm-hmm. for several reasons, not the least of which I get to go to
the restaurants.
Shake. Yeah.
The great restaurants there.
Not only St. Elmo's, but Steak and Shake.
St. Elmo's is overrated.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we go there during the combine. It's a traditional thing, of course, and they're good and all, but I've had better steaks at better places. So it's Weber Grill is my place.
Good to know.
When we go there, and we already have our reservation for Saturday night. So
good to know. Well, I have my reservation at Steak and Shake.
I don't think you need a reservation.
Maybe I'll meet you guys.
I don't think you need a reservation.
Maybe I'll meet you guys for breakfast on Sunday.
Well, you're going again? What are you going for? What are you traveling for?
Just want to see the new stadium and see how they use their technology.
See how their in-game entertainment is better than ours?
I didn't say that.
Wow. Hey, have you listened to my friend's national anthem yet, by the way?
To be honest, I have not.
At least he's honest.
Her dad keeps bugging me. I have a friend who's a singer.
I'll do it right now.
And you don't have to do it right now. I'm just you're in the middle of a show. You've got other things
to do. If the anthem's on time, I should be able to hear it during the break.
Okay.
Well, Eric, thanks again for joining us.
No problem.
Really appreciate it. As always, look forward to spending some time with you out there in Indianapolis.
See you in the press box.
Definitely. We will take a real quick break.
Careful for the mice, though.
This is what I hear.
Those aren't chocolate chips.
They're not chocolate chips. No.
We'll be right back here on Patriots Playbook.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Right back here on Patriots Playbook. My name is Christopher Price, filling in for John Rook. I love a little Pearl Jam. Do you have any Who back there? We got to play some Who a little bit later.
I'll find some Who for you.
Definitely, because the Who, I don't know if people have heard, I don't know if you heard, the Who is going to be playing halftime of the Super Bowl this year. The Who. It's going to be fantastic. I hope I can make it. I'm going if the Patriots are going. I have a conditional press pass, so we'll see. Anyway, my name is Chris Price, right here on Patriots Playbook. If you want to give us a call, the number is 508-543-7482. That number again is 508-543-7482. If you want to send us an email, send it to webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. We will get to those momentarily, but first on the line,
Baxter.
We have Russell Baxter from ESPN. How you doing, Russell?
Hello, Chris Price. Loved your rap on the Thriller album. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you very much. That, I don't know if that was me, though. You might be thinking about my Uncle Vincent.
Yes. I was a big fan, as a matter of fact. House of Wax, one of my favorite movies when I was a kid.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, we're going to take a spin around the National Football League here, and we will wrap up with the big game, obviously. We'll save that one until the very end, the Patriots and the Colts. Consider that dessert, basically. But let's start off with... If the Patriots and the Colts is dessert, this might be the vegetables. This might be the game that you don't want to see. Jacksonville and the New York Jets.
Well, yeah, you never know what you're going to get, actually, with either one of these teams. I mean, the Jaguars have been a roller coaster ride, to say the least. The New York Jets got off to that 3-0 start, 1-4 their last five games. Turnover prone at times, but I think their game 2 weeks ago had to take the cake. Gave up 104 yards of total offense to the Miami Dolphins, and yet Ted Ginn Jr. returned two kickoffs for at least 100 yards in the same quarter, which had never been done in NFL history. Jason Taylor scooped up a fumble, and the Jets found a way to lose, and a real costly loss, too, which means they got swept by Miami in the division. They've already lost two division games at home this year. So really kind of puts them behind the eight ball. Hard to tell what you're going to get here. The Jets' defense has been a little hot and cold as well. Maurice Jones-Drew has been hot, 407 yards rushing, six touchdowns in the last three games. You know, he's that bowling ball that makes them go. But at any one time, Jacksonville can beat Houston and lose 41-0 to Seattle. So based on moderate consistency, I'll take the New York Jets here.
I'm looking around the AFC East here, and we talked about the Patriots-Colts game. But the AFC East, there's not a lot of good games this week. We have the aforementioned Jacksonville Jets game. You have Buffalo and Tennessee, and you have Tampa Bay and Miami. Tampa Bay and Miami, the battle of South Florida there. What stands out for you the most in this one? And let's start on the Miami side of the football.
Well, listen, I thought they played a solid game last week with too many breakdowns against the Patriots, especially defensively. Listen, they can move the football with that Wildcat offense, and now you know why they brought in Pat White. It added a little extra special dimension to it. But they've got a very young secondary, get two rookie corners there, and that's a bad news against the Wes Welkers and the Randy Mosses of the world. I don't know if it's bad news necessarily against the Tampa Bay receiving game. I think you have to be concerned with the linebackers because you got Kellen Winslow there, who's always a threat, especially downfield. But I think Miami will find a way to get more than adequate heat on Josh Freeman, who did a very good job last week, made plays when he had to in upsetting the Packers.
Can Vince Young breathe any sort of life into that Tennessee offense, looking at this Tennessee-Buffalo game?
Well, I think he has, and strangely, it's because of the fact that, listen, and they've gotten their share of big plays from their defense as well, but, Chris, I find it hard to believe, they have not turned over the football since Vince Young came into the lineup.
Wow.
No turnovers in two games, which, you know, it's kind of, we think of that kind of the opposite with Vince Young. But Chris Johnson is another hot running back. You know, he just breaks off these long runs almost at will last week. He had a real long one. You know, he had like 135 yards rushing at San Francisco. It looked like it was going to be more. He looked like he broke one off before he stepped out of bounds. Timely plays by Justin Gage in the passing game. I wouldn't be surprised if Tennessee makes a little run at 500 here, even though they were 0-6. And funny enough, remember, they were 0-5 3 years ago and still managed to get the 500. So, you know, one thing about Jeff Fisher team, I know they laid that horrendous egg 59-0 at New England. But I think there's still a lot of never say die in this team.
Do you think that's enough to save Jeff Fisher's job?
Yeah, because I think he's bought up a lot of goodwill there. Listen, they had the best record in the league last year. So I think they'd probably have to go 3-13 to even consider it.
The Thursday night schedule begins this week. Tonight in San Francisco, we have the Bears and the 49ers. This Bears team, I have to confess, I'm a Bears fan, but I'm not quite sure what to make of this Bears team this year.
Well, I think I am, and first off, their defense has been terrible. They've given up 12 touchdown passes in the last four games, and most of that in two games, a five-touchdown loss to Carson Palmer, a five-touchdown pass loss to Kurt Warner. Their defense has really gone belly up here. And, you know, Jay Cutler, you never know what you're going to get with him. To me, he doesn't look that much different than he looked in Denver. I mean, he was sub-500 quarterback in terms of win-loss. You know, he'll throw his share of touchdown passes. He'll throw his share of interceptions. He's still got a lot of raw tools there, but I think they need him to be the pitch man. Because defensively, it's hard for them to keep up. I mean, look, 41-21, 45-10, those losses to Arizona and Cincinnati, sandwiched in there, they managed to beat the Browns, or it could be a lot worse. And I think they're running into a buzzsaw here. But you got to admit, Chris, how weird does it sound to have Mike Singletary face the Bears?
It is. I've seen a couple of reports on that this week. It's strange to see, and it's going to be strange to see this week, on the other sideline.
It kind of reminds me all the time the Colts at Baltimore when Indianapolis has to go into to play the Ravens.
Something
Colts
just ain't right.
Still, to me, it's still weird to see Cardinals at St. Louis.
It's bizarre. I agree with you on that one. Earlier this week on Twitter, Chad Ochocinco referred to this week's Cincinnati Pittsburgh game as a two chin strap kind of a game. Is there any reason to think he's wrong in this one?
He might be betting the under there as far as chin straps. I will say that. Listen, even when the Bengals have had their problems, they've always played Pittsburgh tough, although they haven't had a lot of success against them. But they're in a position to do something they haven't done in 11 years, Chris. They haven't swept the Steelers since 1998. That's an awful long time ago. Listen, they're 4-0 to division. They've already swept Baltimore. Huge statement game for them. You got to give them credit. You know, a lot of people thought that their defense might fall apart when Antoine Odom got. Remember Antoine Odom with the 8 sacks real quick this year?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this team has 21 sacks in 8 games. Now, that doesn't sound like a ton. But you consider they had 17 all of last year. You know, they've held their last 4 opponents under 100 yards rushing. They are getting great. Cedric Benson has 400-yard games already this season. He's second in the NFL in rushing. That being said, I think the Steelers gave us a glimpse of what they might be headed toward in terms of confidence and execution on Monday night. And, you know, in the last couple of weeks they've played, and they had a bye week in there. They handed the Vikings their only loss of the season, and they handled the Broncos at Denver. It's a very confident football team, and they're champions for a reason. I wouldn't be stunned if Cincinnati pulled it off, but I think the Steelers are starting to feel their oats. I'll leave it at that.
One of the games that I think a lot of folks here in New England are going to be keeping an eye on is Denver and Washington, because Denver is going to be one of those teams that the Patriots are going to be fighting with for maybe that second or even a, you know, down the, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself, but you know, one of those first two spots in the AFC. Was Denver exposed as a bit of a paper tiger over the last, or have they been exposed as a bit of a paper tiger over the last couple of weeks?
I don't think necessarily a paper tiger. Listen, we know, as you well know, it's hard to go undefeated in this league. Even if you go undefeated in the regular season, it's hard to go undefeated. But they've played two style of football teams that don't play to their strengths. I don't know. Paper tiger would include wins over New England and Dallas. So I'm not ready to say paper tiger. So I think you give them credit for beating those teams. But I think they ran into the buzzsaw in Baltimore for the team that really needed a game. And, I'm a big, big believer in it's not how you win in this league. It's a lot of times how you respond after a loss. And, you know, that one loss which kind of, you know, sets you on your heels. You know, up until a couple weeks ago, Mike Smith and the Falcons had not lost back-to-back games since he became head coach. Now that finally happened when they lost to Dallas and New Orleans in consecutive weeks. But last year, you know, you think of Pittsburgh won the Super Bowl with that rugged schedule that they played. They never lost back-to-back games. And now we've seen that in a couple instances. Look at the New York Giants, 5-0, now 5-4. The 49ers were 3-1. They've lost 4 in a row. So getting into these tailspins are things you try to avoid. And they should bounce back against the Redskins this week. And then I believe they played the San Diego Chargers at Denver. You know, I think you've got to play a certain style of defense against, you know, Kyle Orton. And listen, I don't think it's all on Kyle Orton. But when you don't challenge teams downfield like the Broncos didn't do against Baltimore or Pittsburgh, eventually you're going to get yourself in trouble, and eventually even a good defense, and that's still a very good defense that Denver has, is going to run out of time.
One of the things that I wanted to get to, and they're not on the schedule this week, but you touched on them a little bit, were those New York Giants. And I'm asking this of all my friends who are Giants fans, what's wrong with the Giants?
Well, injuries in the secondary, lack of a pass rush, just a penchant of giving up very big plays. It's been a rough couple of weeks. You know, they're going to probably get Aaron Ross back at the corner. They've missed Kenny Phillips at the safety spot real bad. But, like, 6 sacks in 4 games, I mean, that's a healthy afternoon for the Giants. And that's what they have in their last 4 games. And what a bone-crushing loss last week. You know, in which they look tentative down the stretch, and that hasn't been the Giants. But that to me goes back to my point about confidence and how you handle losses. And, you know, the Giants look like they're on the verge of snapping their 3-game losing streak, and now it's 4. And you just have to be wary of these things, because avoiding these long slumps is the difference between being a playoff team and then wind up being like a 10-6 team and not making the playoffs.
All right, we had the lead up to it. Now let's go for it here. The Patriots and the Colts.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk Chiefs Raiders.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Chiefs and the Raiders. Tell me about this one. Now, the Patriots and the Colts, tell me what jumps out for you, because we've gone over all these numbers. We've done Brady versus Manning and the Patriots, and what stands out for you about this game from a numbers perspective?
Well, I look at the Colts defense, you know, minus guys, still the last 6 games held teams to 17 points or less, getting multiple turnovers in these games, you know, taking away the football, finding ways to win. But living a little on borrowed time the last few weeks, the squeak one out against San Francisco, got a missed field goal at the end to preserve the win over Houston. You know, Peyton Manning threw the ball 40 times in the first half against the Texans and only produced 13 points. So to me, the Colts seem like they're living a little on borrowed time. The Patriots, you know, I still think they have issues on their defense, but offensively they seem to be playing with more confidence. I mean, to me, this has high-scoring game written all over it, and I don't mean 24-20 like the last time they played in Indy. I mean, I don't know. This is maybe a 38-34 type of game.
Wow, no, really. No, we were thinking that we were kind of scaling back a little bit. You think it's going to be you think the game's going to be in the 30s?
I think with the problems that the Colts have at their corners, you know, Marlon Jackson's out for the year. Bob Sanders, the safety, is out for the year. The Patriots, to me, have not shown that they are a dominant defensive team. I mean, I know they shut out Houston. I'm sorry, I'm sure they shut out Tennessee, and I know they beat Tampa Bay. But, you know, Miami had its moments last week throwing the football on them. They've had other teams that have been able to move the ball on them and so on. You know, to me, Indy has relied on takeaways and sacks. And unless they get a lot of heat on Brady, and I mean a lot of heat, to me, unless they sack him, when they have one of those five-sack games and stuff. I just like the Patriots. I like the Patriots the way they're playing a little more than the Colts are right now.
What do you think about the school of thought that says if you want to beat the Colts, you have to keep Peyton Manning off the field so you kind of become a ball control team?
Ask the Miami Dolphins, who had the ball for 46 minutes
exactly
in week two, if that is exactly the case. Listen, Peyton Manning has thrown for 300 yards seven of the first eight games this year, which I don't think has ever been done. Okay? So one of those games was when he had the ball for 14 minutes. So now I listen, does that help? But this year, I mean, I have joked all year that Peyton Manning could be the first player in ever NFL history to be NFL MVP and head coach of the year. Okay, and that's not a knock to Jim Caldwell because he's done an outstanding job. Listen, you just don't take a team that, you know, has been successful for 7 years and make them 8-0. Okay, so I don't want people to take that. To me, that's more of a compliment of how smart and organized Peyton Manning is. Listen, we saw Peyton Manning last year when he wasn't organized and when he was beat up, and they got off to a 3-4 start. And starting with last year's 18-15 win in the regular season against the Patriots, the Colts haven't lost a regular season game since. It's now 17 wins in a row. But I get a feeling it might end this week.
Russell, give us the name of someone that we might not think of who you think has the potential to stand up and have a great game on Sunday night, to have a really important game, to have really have a role in deciding the outcome of this contest.
Oh, well, I mean, maybe it's the rookie Sebastian Bulmer who has to deal with Dwight Freeney. Because if you can keep Dwight Freeney, I think, is on a streak now where he's had a sack in what, every game this year?
Mm-hmm.
Protecting Tom Brady is always a priority. And I know he's you know, as far as I know, Matt Light, you can tell me more than that, if Matt Light is expected to play this week.
I wouldn't doubt it. I would put it this way, I wouldn't bet on it.
I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're not allowed to bet anyway.
That's
so
true.
But in any case, you know, early in the season, Vollmer came in there in some spot duty. They're going to need him to come up big time because the one thing about Dwight Freeney, he turns the corner on you. He not only sacks you, he has that ability to take the football away from you. And you limit Patriot mistakes, which they don't make a lot to begin with anyway. Then you make it all that much harder on the Colts.
Russell, before we get you out of here, give us your take on this game. Who's going to win, who's going to lose?
I'm going to take New England. I'm thinking like a 31-27 game, which won't require a late Sebastian Janikowski field goal, but it might require a late Brady DeMoss connection.
Very nice. Thank you for your time. Russell Baxter from ESPN, thanks for joining us.
You got it, Chris.
Russell Baxter, always enjoyable, always fun to talk to. I love kind of going around the league and getting some of these informational nuggets, getting some of these numbers that really you have to kind of search for, and that's what he does for ESPN. He always gives us the inside stuff. He always kind of gives us something to look for each and every week. Right here on Patriots Playbook, my name is Christopher Price, filling in for John Rook. You are listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com. If you want to give us a call, the number is 508-543-7482. That number again is 508-543-7482. You can also send us an email, send it to webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. We're going to take a real quick break and be back right after this.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football shape serving trays.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Madison and Terry!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. and is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Very nice. Very nice. For my money, maybe the best classic rock band of all time. That's The Who. I feel this goes back to my old DJ days. I love this. This is fantastic. We should talk it up before. My name is Chris Price. You're listening to Patriots Playbook right here on Patriots.com. The phone number is 508-543-7482. That's 508-543-7482. Send us an email to webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. The reason that we're playing The Who, other than the fact that they are completely awesome, finish off, there we go, very nice, is that the news came out today that The Who is going to be playing halftime of this year's Super Bowl. This year's Super Bowl, Super Bowl 44, being held in Miami, I believe at Landshark Stadium, if I remember correctly. Landshark Stadium is going to be the site of Super Bowl 44, and The Who will be playing at halftime of Super Bowl 44. Last year was Springsteen. A couple of years ago, obviously, it was U2. They're kind of, I like that. I like this move. I like this idea. Of course, I'm a big fan of The Who, but hey, that's neither here nor there. Once again, my name is Chris Price. You're listening to Patriots Playbook right here on Patriots.com. I'm filling in for John Rook. And one of the things that we've been talking about today with the Patriots and the Colts coming up, rapidly approaching this Sunday, Sunday night at 8:20, at Lucas Oil Stadium are our favorite Patriots-Colts memories, things that really stand out for you about the Patriots and the Colts rivalry. And we dated all the way back. We went all the way back to 2001. And one of the things that stands out for me was that game in 2001, that September game in 2001 between the Patriots and the Colts at Foxborough Stadium. And it was Tom Brady's first career start, first start in the National Football League. But Brady really wasn't the big story that day. It was the New England defense, particularly just a crushing hit, an absolute, just a lights-out tackle that Brian Cox put on Indianapolis wide receiver Jerome Pathon that really stood out for me, that was really kind of a tone-setting hit and really managed to let people know, really kind of the word went out at that point, that the New England defense that year was not going to be messed with. The Patriots had forced four turnovers on the day, and that really stood out for me. We were talking with a former Indianapolis coach, Tony Dungy, who is now an analyst for NBC Sports, and we were talking about that before. Things that really stood out for him, things that really kind of, you know, in the rivalry, in the great Patriots-Colts rivalry, and he had, back in 2003, the Willie McGinnis hit on the goal line to take down Edgerrin James to win that game for the Patriots. And, by the way, he also mentioned the 2006 AFC Championship game between the Patriots and the Colts that the Colts ended up walking away with. But we have one of those great moments, one of the great moments, really, in the Patriots-Colts rivalry, queued up and ready to go for you now.
Peyton Manning calling signals. He drops back to throw. He looks, he fires, it's complete to Reggie Wayne. Whoa, what a hit by Brian Cox at the Patriot 47 as Wayne went shoes over tea kettle.
That's a great description of that, going shoes over tea kettle. I don't think I've ever quite heard that before. Love Gilson.
That was that same 2001 game you were referencing.
They really, the Patriots defense that afternoon really let the rest of the National Football League know, because at that point, you got to remember, Tom Brady was not an established entity. Tom Brady was not quite Tom Brady just quite yet. He was a guy who was still a relatively unknown quarterback. The Patriots didn't put a whole lot on his plate. They didn't ask him to do a whole lot. And so consequently, it was the defense that had to carry the day. The defense were able, they forced four turnovers on Peyton Manning. The Colts came into that game, they were 2-0. It was week three of the season. The Colts were 2-0, and it averaged about 40 points or so coming into that afternoon. We're taking some email here as well. If you want to send us an email to webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. We're going over some emails, and some folks have shared some of their favorite moments in the Patriots-Colts rivalry. Again, we're going back to 2001, so anything before that, don't even worry about it. This email is from, it just says Fat Pat, so we'll go with that. I like that. He says, my favorite Colts-Patriots moment is not a touchdown play, not a defensive play. It wasn't even really a play at all. It was the Patriots penalty. In the 2007 season, during the Colts' final possession, Jarvis Green stripped Peyton Manning, and Rosie Colvin came up with a football to clinch the game. Colvin then stomped toward midfield and spiked the football right on the center of the Colts' horseshoe logo.
Manning in the shotgun formation, third down and nine. Patriots lead 24-20, direct snap to Manning. Here's the rush. He steps up. He's going to be hit, and he tosses the ball, and it's caught by the Patriots going down at the 41-yard line. Roosevelt Colvin, it's an interception, and the Patriots take over with 2:25 to go in the game. Manning was about to go down. He flipped the ball, and Roosevelt Colvin intercepted it, and the Patriots get the interception and now have the football at the Indianapolis 41-yard line with 2:25 to go.
Now, right after that, Fat Pat says, watching the rubber chip off the field and on the football damn near touch the ceiling of the RCA Dome made it that much more delightful. That was hilarious. I loved it. But as far as one of the greatest plays, which may be underrated, I think it was the 06 championship when Brady scrambled in the pocket for what seemed like forever and found Gaffney in the back of the end zone for a key touchdown. Hit me thinking, hey, this Gaffney guy is all right. It was challenged and stood as a TD. Great pocket awareness, great throw, great catch. Now, I don't know if it was Gaffney that made that catch. I think it might have been Richey Caldwell. We can go back and look that up. But that 2006 championship game for me, and we talked about this with Eric Scalavino of PFW and Patriots.com a little bit earlier, that game really stood out for me. Maybe one of the best games that I've ever seen, that I've had the privilege to see. That was in the old RCA Dome, a loud, loud building. And now we could go over and we could talk about whether or not they piped in the noise, whether or not they artificially hyped up the crowd. That's neither here nor there. That was a great game. It was a loud building. It was an unbelievable environment. Patriots took a 21-3 lead. I think they led 21-6 at halftime. And we talked a little bit about this before. There were a lot of reporters. I'm not going to name names here, but there were a lot of reporters in the press box who were booking flights to Super Bowl 41 at halftime before the end of the game, before that one wrapped up. That one, for me, was one of my favorite memories. I wrote a column today for WEEI.com talking about the five greatest moments in the history of the Patriots-Colts rivalry, and I threw those out there. Let us know. Give us a call here at 508-543-7482. That number again is 508-543-7482. Let us know of your favorite moments in the Patriots-Colts rivalry. My name is Chris Price. You are tuned to Patriots Playbook right here on Patriots.com. I'm trying to call up these emails here. Got one from Todd Porter. There we go. Todd Porter. Todd Porter emails us. The Patriot Colt game for me is the 2003 conference. The 2003 playoff game between the Patriots and the Colts at Gillette Stadium. Ty Law's performance in that game was as good a game as I've ever seen a cornerback play. That game alone should get him into the Hall of Fame.
Manning out of the shotgun, Rhodes to his left in the backfield. Big fourth down, direct snap to Manning. Standing in there, fires to the right, intercepted, Ty Law at the 20, back to the 25, heading to the right, is going to be hit, springs away from that one at the 30, at the 30-yard line goes Ty Law, his third pass interception of the game.
Now, is either the 2003 or the 2004 playoff game between those two teams that the Patriots ended up putting such a hurt on the Indianapolis Colts? That was the same year that Peyton Manning was doing those MasterCard commercials where he was saying, cut that meat, cut that meat. That was 2004? That was 2004. And the fans at the end of the game were chanting, cut that meat at Peyton Manning. It was fun. It was a great environment. It was a great football game. Every time these two teams get together, it means something, whether it's the regular season, whether it's the postseason. I was talking about this earlier today in the locker room with Kevin Falk. And he said, whoever wins this game, and the phrase he used, I thought it was a great phrase that he used, whoever wins this game gets a little comfort zone. You know, it's not an end-all game, not an end-all and be-all, but whoever wins this game gets a little comfort zone. And I think the Patriots know this year that if they win this game, it takes a large step toward getting one of those top two spots in the AFC playoff picture. And if you get one of those top two spots, you get that first week off, you get those games at home, it makes life a whole lot easier down the road. Going to go to another email. This one is from Paul, who I know, by the way, who follows me on Twitter. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at twitter.com/CapeLeaguer. Thank you very much, Jason. That's twitter.com/CapeLeaguer. Hey, Chris, with 10 players again being out of practice today, as well as Baker in the red jersey, what are the chances of another practice squad player being promoted with maybe an IR move in the near future for somebody? What team are you more worried about facing right now with this team, the Saints or the Colts? And is there one team that would make you more scared of, Indianapolis or New Orleans? And one more quick question. If you could have one Colts player to replace one Patriots starter with, who would it be? Mine would be Dwight Freedy replacing Jarvis Green / Mike Wright. Thank you very much for the email, Paul. All great questions. I don't think the Patriots are going to make a practice squad move. I think they are happy, relatively happy as you can be at this time of year, with the health of their team. 10 guys out of practice. It's a lot of guys. I think they had 9 guys out of practice today. Actually, Randy Moss was back after missing yesterday's practice with a non-football-related whatever. But Chris Baker was in the red jersey, but I don't think the Patriots are going to make a practice squad move in the near future. As for what team are you more worried about facing right now, the Saints or the Colts? Frankly, at this point, and I think this is pretty well documented here, my appearances here and my work over on WEI.com, I'd be more worried about the Saints at this point in the season. The Saints appear to be hitting on all cylinders. The Colts are a little bit banged up. The Colts are not as strong on defense as maybe they were a couple of weeks ago. No Marlon Jackson, no Bob Sanders. They still have a lot of those familiar faces over there, but I think the Colts can be beaten. I look at the Saints, I look at the Superdome, I look at Monday Night Football, and I think that game, if I'm a Patriots fan, has me a little bit more worried than this week against the Colts. I don't get me wrong. I think the Colts are great. I think it's going to be a great game. And after talking to Russell Baxter from ESPN, I'm thinking the game is probably going to be maybe a little bit closer to the high 20s, but I think the Patriots are going to be just a little bit better than the Colts on Sunday. I think they're going to pull this one out. I'm gonna kind of alter it a little bit now. I'm going to say maybe 30 to 23, something along those lines. And the final question from Paul, he says, if you could have one Colts player to replace one Patriots starter, who would it be? Mine would be Freeney replacing Jarvis Green and Mike Wright. You know what? That's probably not, you know, I think I'd have to go with that one. It's a good call. If I could have one Colts player to replace one Patriots starter right now. Yeah. Yeah, you know what? And I'm trying to think on both sides of the football. Offensively, you know, the Patriots are looking pretty good. Defensively, you know, I do. I think the Patriots, if they had their druthers, could use a little bit more depth along that defensive line. Could use a little bit more oomph. And I think maybe the switch Freeney for Jarvis Green and Mike Wright, I think that might work out pretty well for the Patriots, just between you and me. My name again is Christopher Price. You are listening to Patriots.com, Patriots Playbook right here on Patriots.com. If you want to give us a call, the number is 508-543-7482. You can send us an email to webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. We're going to take a real quick break and be back right after this.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in? It
says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good! It's good! That'll be a Terry!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's
greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehallatpatriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
At the 3 yard line, third and goal to go. This is where you can use a guy like Randy Moss on the jump ball. Direct snap to Brady. Looking, fires left, up for it, and grabbing it for a touchdown. Randy Moss. Good call, Gil. He went for the jump ball, and he got it. Touchdown pass number 31 for Brady. Touchdown reception number 12 for Randy Moss, and the Patriots take the lead.
Right back here on Patriots Playbook. My name is Chris Price, sitting in for John Rook. We're talking about, that's perfect, we're talking about classic rock, we're talking about The Who, and we're talking about Patriots Colts. First of all, classic rock, because it was announced today, or it was found out today, that The Who is going to be playing the halftime show at the Super Bowl this year, Super Bowl 44, at Landshark Stadium in Miami. I love that. We come in and out with The Who.
You would think they would have played Buffett for halftime at Landshark Stadium.
Yeah, but you know what? You got to get some. No, I think the choice of The Who makes perfect sense when you consider where they've gone over the last few years. They've had Springsteen, they've had the Stones, they had U2 a little while back. Makes perfect sense. I think you keep going in this direction, it's a good call by the National Football League. I love it. We're talking about classic rock. We got an email about classic rock. Shannon Klink was not a fan of my call. Did not think that my call of The Who as the best classic rock band of all time. Thought it was off base. Let's just put it that way. We got an email to webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. Shannon says, The Who are the greatest classic rock band of all time. What? No. Who? Come on, palsy. You can't even put them in the top 10 with the likes of, now get this, with the likes of Zeppelin, the Beatles, the Stones, the Doors. Okay, I'll give you those four. Then Steely Dan, Creedence, Hendrix. Okay, I'll put Hendrix up there. The Grateful Dead. The Grateful Dead's an acquired taste. Dylan, Fleetwood Mac, The Eagles, Cream, The Guess Who. You're going to put The Guess Who ahead of The Who? I'm sorry. That's where you lost me. That's where, you know, I was listening to your argument, but at that point, that's where you lost me. They also include Pink Floyd and on and on and on. I know that's more than 10, but take your pick. Any one of those bands, in my fine opinion, are far superior to The Who. Just like those Irish guys, U2, The Who are completely overrated. Any Patriots win over the Dolts in the playoffs this decade, they're all my favorites. That's Shannon Klink weighing in on the Patriots and the Colts. And classic rock. And I got to tell you, Shannon, I think you're way off base on that one. The Guess Who? Come on. The Guess Who? Better than The Who? Steely Dan? Better than The Who? Give me a break. My name is Chris Price. You're listening to Patriots Playbook right here on Patriots.com. The phone number, if you want to join us, is 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. If you want to send us an email, send it to webradio@patriots.com. It's kind of a slow day. We were talking about this before. It's kind of a slow day in the pro football world. We were just going over Pro Football Talk, one of my favorite sites. They did announce the news that The Who is going to be playing halftime of the Super Bowl this year. They also found out via the Kansas City Star today, they've accurately sniffed out the fact that running back Larry Johnson is in Dallas, but a league source tells Pro Football Talk that Johnson is in Dallas for a social visit only, and not because he's meeting with the Cowboys, not yet anyway. So Larry Johnson is still out there. It's one of the hot topics this week. But again, this is Colts week. This is Colts Patriots week, and it's gotten a lot of people thinking, gotten a lot of people talking about their favorite moments of the Colts Patriots rivalry. We've been playing a few of them. We had the 2001 game between the Patriots and the Colts, the one where the Patriots really really laid the smack down in Indianapolis. Tom Brady's first professional start here. Patriots ended up winning that game 44-13. We have the 2003 and 2004 playoff games. They were both here at Gillette Stadium. The 2006 AFC Championship game as well was a memorable one for many, many reasons.
And here's one from last year for you.
Second and goal, Patriots, Indianapolis, 6-yard line. Castle on the draw to Green Ellis, coming to the left, shoots it down to the goal line, and he is down, and he is in. Touchdown, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis. 6-yard touchdown run, and for the Patriot rookie from Ole Miss, that is touchdown number 3 rushing on the season.
We just got another email. That's a call we haven't heard a whole lot of this year, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis. I got a few emails from folks. I do a mailbag every week on Patriots, not on Patriots, but on WEI.com. Patriots-related mailbag on WEI.com. Thank you. I must be setting a land speed record for plugs here on this show.
We got to let you promote your stuff. You're filling in. It's fair game.
That's true. Well, I do a mailbag, a Patriots-related mailbag, every week on WEI.com. And I got a lot of emails from people saying, you got to give Ben Jarvis Green Ellis a chance. You got to give him a chance. I think Ben Jarvis is a great complementary player who adds some depth at the running back position, but I don't think he's the sort of guy that you want to build your offense around. He's not the sort of guy who can really get the job done over a sustained period of time when it comes to running the football. Just got an email, came in from Jeff Lutz. Email came into webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. He says, hey, fellas, I might be too late for this, but how about Bruschi grabbing the ball from Dominic Rhodes from, I think, the 2004 playoff game? Awesome moment. Cheers, Jeff, in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. Good to know we have listeners up in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. That was a great moment. Actually, a moment that one of our listeners, Dwayne, one of our callers, brought up a little bit before. If you want to be a caller, give us a shout at 508-543-7482.
I have that call if you want it.
Let's go for it.
On second down and 17, from wide left in motion, right comes Wayne. Back to throw is Manning. Fires to the right, caught, and immediately dragged down at the 41. Was Dominic Rhodes tackled by Teddy Bruschi.
And there we go.
The Patriots have the football.
Yeah.
Bruschi ripped it out of his hands. The Patriots take over as Teddy Bruschi made the tackle on the completion to Dominic Rhodes, and Bruschi ripped it right out of his hands, and the Patriots have the football at their own 41. They blunt the Indianapolis drive.
Those playoff games in 2003 and 2004 between the Patriots and the Colts, I think, might have been the high water marks for the New England defense this decade. Those two games, those were really, and I was thinking about this earlier today, those two defenses, the 03 defense and the 04 defense, the 03 defense I think had Ted Washington for a year, the 04 defense, both of those were just, those guys would just, I tell you, it was a great defense. It was really, really impressive. It was fun to watch. It was a great team to watch. And those games, again, we talked about this before, those games didn't disappoint. We don't think this week's game between the Patriots and the Colts, we don't think that one's going to disappoint either.
Slot to the far side, left is Stokely. Wayne to the far side, near side right is Harrison. Play action fake by Manning. He's hit and sacked. Rock back inside the 25 by Willie McGinnis.
That was the 2003 playoff game. Willie McGinnis, I think, really was the centerpiece at the center of so many of those great moments we talked about from 2003 and 2004 between these two teams. The 2003 game, the regular season game at the RCA Dome, he made that huge stop on Edgerrin James, a huge stop on Edgerrin James at the goal line to allow the Patriots to come away with a 38-34 victory. One of my favorite scenes from that game was at the very end, after he made that stop and just he took off running toward midfield, celebrating. That was a great game, a 38-34 win for the Patriots. And then the season opener the following year, 2004, here at Gillette Stadium, was able to come up with a very big sack of Peyton Manning. And we talked a little earlier about how it's so hard to be able to sack Peyton Manning. Well, Willie McGinnis was able to sack Peyton Manning, not only to sack Peyton Manning, but to knock him out of field goal range. Mike Vanderjagt came into that game, came into that kick. He had made 42 in a row before he do we have the miss?
I have the McGinnis hit.
Let's have the McGinnis hit. Let's pull that out. Let's listen to that one again.
Manning out of a shotgun takes the snap. Here's the rush by Willie McGinnis. He sacks him back at the 30-yard line.
Now, that was with less than a minute to go. He sacked Peyton Manning, pushed them way out, pushed them. I think it ended up being a 48-yard field goal attempt for Vanderjagt, and this is what happened.
Ball is in the middle of the field. They snap the ball down. The kick is up. The kick is on the way, and the kick is
no good.
No good! No good! Vanderjagt's 42-strike field goal is broken. He misses with 19 seconds left, and the Super Bowl champs will make it 16 wins in a row.
Now, that was set up by the fact that McGinnis' sack on Manning pushed them back, I believe now, I could be wrong, I pushed them back close to 20 yards. And it was that play, pushed the Colts out of field goal range, ended up winning the game for the Patriots. We have more email. We have another email. It's going to take some time for it to this computer in here, you know this computer in here, it takes a while for it to, it takes a while.
We got to beat the monkeys and get them to spin a little quicker.
It's going to come up. No worries. We're here till 4 o'clock, and in at 4 o'clock, he's going to jump on now while we wait for the computer to pull back up again, is Brian Lowe. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great, Chris. How you doing? How are your hour and 53 minutes so far?
Not bad, not bad. We're talking about our favorite moments from the Patriots and the Colts. We're talking about our favorite moments from the Patriots-Colts rivalry dating back to 2001. What stands out for you?
Dwayne Starks.
Really?
What a great – he got cut right after the game, right? No five?
I don't even think he made it to the locker room before he got cut.
Correct. I think halftime – he may have gotten cut at halftime.
That was 2005.
That was 05, yeah.
That was 2005.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. The pace and the flow of the rivalry sort of changed, I think, at the Dwayne Starks juncture.
You know what? That's a good point. You can look at the Dwayne Starks rivalry and you can say – okay, you know, the Colts started to gain a little traction, a little momentum at that point.
I would say, well, I mean, you know, the obvious is the Willie McGinnis play, which was, that was the first year that I was sort of around covering the team, and I was there at that game, and that was pretty amazing. But I think the playoff game in 03 and 04, both years, the playoffs here, I forget which year it was that it was almost like someone turned on the snow mm-hmm. moments before the game.
Mm-hmm.
Both were weather-related games. It was just those two playoff games because that was really at the height of the Manning frustration. The Belichick is in this guy's head. Brady has the upper hand.
As we said before, the origin of the Peyton Manning face.
The origin of the Peyton Manning face, no question about it. And you know, then, you know, it's from 05 through 08, the Patriots won one game. That was the 07 regular season game when both teams entered undefeated. And the Colts have kind of had the upper hand. I'll tell you what, at halftime of the AFC Championship game in 07, as a Patriots fan, feeling pretty good.
We were literally
Asante Samuel intercept. Yep, you're feeling pretty good.
We were talking about that before, and there were members of the media booking flights. Press box, not naming names, but people were booking flights to Super Bowl 41.
Name some partial, you know, letters of different names. I would have been also.
All right, we got the injury report. It was literally just handed to me by Jason. Here we go. Okay. It's Wednesday, Thursday. I always have trouble reading. Okay, here we go. Did not participate in practice today. Eric Alexander, Julian Edelman, Jarvis Green, Dan Copen, Matt Light, Brandon Merriweather, Sammy Morris, Brandon Tate, Fred Taylor, and Ty Warren. I feel like I'm reading school closings here. And now two guys had limited we had limited participation. Two guys with limited participation today. Tight end Chris Baker, because of a shoulder injury, he was actually wearing a red non-contact jersey during practice today. And Tully Vanta-Kane, linebacker, limited participation because of a groin injury, which is, I think
he wasn't there yesterday, right?
No, he was not on the list yesterday.
which means he wasn't there on the list yesterday. That was my fault, Jason. Sorry. He wasn't on the list yesterday, which means that could be something that popped up during practice.
Exactly.
Today, which that's not good.
Let me read you the list again. It's nine guys here who did not participate in practice today. Eric Alexander, Julian Edelman, Jarvis Green, Dan Copen, Matt Light, Sammy Morris, Brandon Merriweather, Brandon Tate, Fred Taylor, and Ty Warren. No real surprises on here. The one that stood out for me, limited participation, was Tully Vanta-Kane, but there are no real surprises. I think there might be a little concern over Merriweather, the fact that he has not been able to get back yet. But, again, no shockers.
No, because most of those guys are the guys who have been out for multiple weeks, or we knew that Copen and Tate got hurt in the game the other day. What their status is for this week. Usually by Thursday, if they're not seen at practice, if they're not out there, that's not a good sign. But I would agree that Merriweather being the one that was sort of a surprise yesterday. I don't think anyone had seen that, an injury. And you know, if Brandon Merriweather's not out there for two straight days, that definitely, you know, he's a starting safety. And, you know, we don't need to go into any more detail on the Colts offense. And you want all the members of your secondary that you can get. So that one. And then if Tully Vanta-Kane has an injury issue, he's been one of their most impressive, consistent defensive performers this year.
One of the things, they are a little deeper at safety than they've been in recent years. And you have a few more options. But again, you never like to see something like this, especially before a big game like this week between the Patriots and the Colts. Got a real quick email I want to get to, the subject of which is the law firm. Christopher Longmoon emails me saying, your statement, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, is not someone you want to build your offense around. Why? My recollection is that when he's been called upon, he's filled in admirably, even having a 100-plus yard day. On what do you base your claim? Signed, Chris in Seattle. My statement was that Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is a fine complementary player, but not the sort of guy you want to build your offense around. He's not the kind of guy long-term who can sustain a running game. I think that he is fine in short bursts. I think he is fine in stretches, but I don't think that he's the kind of guy who's going to be, you know, who's going to be taking the ball 250 times a year.
I agree with you. And what I've said in the past is when he – great story. I mean, the guy comes out of nowhere.
Fantastic story. Great guy. And when he's been called upon, I agree with you here, Chris. He's run well.
And I think last year when he jumped into the mix, which was, I believe, that Monday night game when Sammy Morris got hurt against the Broncos, around this time of year, he had then played I think he scored touchdowns in three or four straight games. He entered the picture right at the moment that the offense was really jumping into gear. Mm-hmm. Castle had started to get into a rhythm. The offensive line was playing great. They were at the point where, I don't literally mean anybody could have stepped in at running back, but anybody who was at the level that these National Football League players were at, the running back's job sort of became easy because of the way the offense was going.
They could have plugged a lot of guys in there.
Right, and I think Ben Jarvis Green Ellis was... He was the guy at that time. Not to take anything away from him, because I don't literally mean anyone could do it. He had to have some skill, and he took advantage of the opportunity. I just don't think he's at the caliber of some of these other guys they have. He is right now their backup running back, and that's where he should be. Mm-hmm. Good guy to have. They obviously think highly of him, like you said, as a short-term fix, and maybe as a guy who long-term could be a role player. They play different ways, but like Falk and Heath Evans have been, they maintain a position on the team because of a role that they play.
Well, he's played some fullback.
He has played some fullback.
I don't mean to jump in and cut you off, but he played some fullback this week.
He has.
And I think the fact that he is able to show a little bit of a different side of him, I think that helps him. And I think that's going to help him down the road. But again, I don't think he's going to be – I don't think – and I don't mean to slight him here, and this is – I don't think he's ever going to be a feature back. I don't think he's ever going to be the man.
And I also think that, you know, right now they really only have three healthy running backs, Maroney, Falk, and Green Ellis. I think the fact that they haven't – replenish that position and brought in someone for a short burst is because they are confident that Green Ellis, let's say Lawrence Maroney, comes up lame in the first quarter on Sunday night and they only have three running backs. I think they feel confident that in that game, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis can do what they need to do.
Exactly.
If three running backs ahead of him on the depth chart go out for the year, I don't think they feel that Ben Jarvis Green Ellis could carry the load the rest of the way.
Exactly. What do you have coming up for us on Fantasy Lowdown?
Fantasy Lowdown. We've got a lot of, you know, just the topics of the week. Now, buys, we're starting to – this is the last week of bye weeks, but it's the first week of Thursday night games. People are trying to set their lineups in the next 4 or 5 hours.
And we'll try to help them out. That's one of the things that I wanted to get in here.
make sure you set your lineup tonight. Because you got Thursday night football for the first time all year.
And in some leagues, you need to set your full lineup by now. In some leagues, depending on what program you use, you might be able to just, if you have a Chicago Bear or San Francisco 49er, you got to get that player in the mix. But then you could go back Saturday. So keep it in mind. It's a good point. These Thursday night games, not only Thanksgiving anymore. These Thursday night games sneak up on you. And we also have a great guest coming on from fantasyguru.com who has been on with us before, answer some questions. So send in your emails, webradio@patriots.com. We'll get to all of them.
Sounds good. I'm going to go set my fantasy lineup. I'm going to get on out of here. As always, I've enjoyed filling in for John Rook. More Who. This is fantastic, man. I love this. I'm going to come back. We got to have some more. When I come back in, we got to have some more Who.
Deal.
Sounds good. My name is Chris Price. You've been listening to Patriots Playbook right here on Patriots.com.